This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Kirkhoff across the line, dropped it for Wheeler into the slot for Ehlers. That bounced off the skate. Coming in late to keep it in is Morrissey. Trying to get into the slot. That's broken up, and now it's a breakaway. Kucherov for Stamkos. Stamkos, Kucherov, a shot. He score. Beautiful play on a 2-on-0 break, and it's 2-0 Tampa.
Good morning. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. The Winnipeg Jets drop a very disappointing game to the Tampa Bay Lightning 7-1 last night. They finished the three-game homestand with a record of 1-2. It's Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. Obviously, Drew Mandel is usually the host of this show. He's away from the program this week, but don't worry. He'll be back next week. Dave?
I wasn't worried.
We're holding it down. What's going on?
Well, we watched quite a hockey game last night. It was a very interesting contest at Bell MTS Place. I'm not entirely sure what we watched, but we watched something for 60 minutes.
And we're going to get into the goals, and there were a lot of them last night when you're talking about the Lightning, and we're going to go back and talk about the homestand, the 1-0 loss to the Nashville Predators Sunday, and then obviously the 4-0 shutout victory over the Vancouver Canucks Tuesday night where Connor Hellebuyck was absolutely sensational. Should mention that we're going to have Murad Ateş of The Athletic coming up at 9:15, and we're going to talk to him more about the game. We're going to preview the upcoming three-game road trip. Want to get your opinion on last night's game? Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. And today's IC question of the day, based on what happened last night, based on, you know, the last, let's say, three games, and, you know, there was a shutout win in there, but there was a pretty poor performance against the Nashville Predators, especially in the first period. So today's Illegal Curve question of the day is, do you believe that the Jets should be in the market for a top four defenseman? We've got the NHL trade deadline coming up in about 5 weeks, right, Dave? It's on February 24th, so that's about 5 weeks if my math is correct. So we want to know. Tweet us at Illegal Curve. You can hit us up on Facebook as well, or you can text us at 129090. But we want to know, do the Jets need to acquire a top four defenseman or a defenseman? I mean, it could be a third pairing defenseman, but I think when you look at how the Jets played defensively yesterday, and sure, you know, the Jets are going to get Tucker Pullman back. It might not be tomorrow, but, you know, Tucker Pullman isn't out long term. So they are going to get a top four defenseman back, but we want to know. So hit us up on Twitter. So Dave, when you look at yesterday's game, it's tough to really, you know, just look at the game based on the score, because if you look at the game based on the score, it was obviously a huge disaster. But, you know, what can we take away from this game? It's obviously going to be all negative, but what stands out to you about that game? Because, you know, you go back to that first period, the Lightning are up 1-0. Anthony Cirelli scores that goal, right? Dmitry Kulikov and Anthony Boteto, there was a little bit of miscommunication there. I think it was Kulikov. It was either Lucas Abiza or Kulikov that was out there in the neutral zone. A little bit of miscommunication. Andre Palat comes away with the puck. Anthony Cirelli makes it 1-0. But, you know, not too long before the Lightning made it 2-0 on that goal by Nikita Kucherov, the 2-on-0 with Stamkos. Not too long before that, Kyle Connor hit the post, if you remember. Josh Morrissey had a couple scoring chances in the first period. So it just seemed to really quickly fall apart for the Jets after it was 2-0, 3-0, 4-0, and so on. And then Carter Verhaeghe makes it 5-0, Dave, and the game is over at that point.
Yeah, you're right, Ezzy. It was a bit of a weird game. I mean, it wasn't disproportionate in terms of shots. The shots were 7-5 after the first period. And so you're sitting there going like, and I think, I can't remember what they were after four, but after 40. But you're just sitting there going, okay.
It was 5-1.
No, I meant like in terms of shots, but I just meant like it was relatively even, and you're sitting there going, okay, and to your point, the Jets had some early chances where you thought, okay, well, they could be into it. And then once it was 2-0, you know, which is not an insurmountable lead, but it just didn't feel like this Jets team had it last night. And you were watching Palmer's talked about the battles they've lost and the one-on-one play. And literally you're sitting there going like, what is going on here? And we watched, you and I watched back in preparation for the show, we watched all the goals again, and you're sitting there thinking to yourself like, and I mean, that took some time because there were seven of them, but you watched it, and Scheifele lost a guy, Laine lost a guy, Ehlers lost a guy, the defensemen were unaware, you know, I mean, Kulikov's deep in the zone and ignores a guy like Kucherov in the neutral zone. So, I mean, there's just a lot of misplays by individual players that Andrew Kopp loses a puck. You know, like there's so many different individual mistakes that were made.
Dave, I want to get more into some of the specific goals. As we mentioned, we're not going to get into all seven goals, but first off, you mentioned what Paul Maurice said after the game. Let's play that clip. It's a short clip. This is Paul Maurice Murat, who we have coming up in about 10 minutes. He asked Paul Maurice if there's anything that you can extrapolate from last night's game.
Yeah, we're going to look at one idea only tomorrow, and that's some of our single gap competitive when the game was one-on-one and we weren't able to at least stop them. You know, first goal, we're there, right? Third one as well, we've got body position, and fourth one and the fifth one as well. I mean, you've got to win those battles. It's not about how many goals you score here in the league. It's the final score that matters.
Okay, Dave, so you mentioned, you know, Andrew Kopp's giveaway. That was the third goal, right? Mm-hmm. We talked about the 2-on-0 goal where Dmitry Kulikov has to be more aware of who's on the ice, right? You've got Nikita Kucherov right behind you. And if you remember, you know, that was coming off of a line change. But that third goal, I mean, Mark Scheifele is right there.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, you're sitting there and you're watching these guys and you're thinking to yourself, like, where's the back check? I mean, where's the coverage? That's the whole point. It's the little things in the game that could turn a game that could be in theory close into a blowout. I mean, and you're watching this and you're thinking to yourself, like, where's the effort? I mean, the guys didn't skate on Wednesday. They had a practice on Thursday. Tampa had played the night before. So, like, and Tampa lost. You know, Tampa comes in having lost to Minnesota, which should be motivation enough for Winnipeg based on the fact of how tight the standings are. And it's interesting, right? Because it's one of those games that you just don't have an explanation for other than they just didn't have it. Because each goal, with the exception of maybe the fifth one, which probably was on Hellebuck, the Verhaeghe goal. I mean, but that's not even entirely on Hellebuck because...
But on that play,
yeah.
Lucas Sabiza tries... So Lucas Sabiza's got the puck around the Jets goal line, right? And he kind of, you know, shoots the puck around the boards to Jack Roslovic.
Right.
It's not a very good pass up to Roslovic. So I wouldn't blame Roslovic because it's put kind of in his skates, right? So it's a miscommunication or just a bad pass from Lucas Sabiza to Jack Roslovic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Lucas Sabiza kind of goes out to challenge Carter Verhaeghe, but then he kind of backs off a little bit.
That's right.
So Verhaeghe kind of has, like, he's right around the circle and he just has a lot of time and it's just a nice shot. So I agree with you. Maybe that was the one goal where you're like, okay, maybe Hellebuck could have stopped that one. But overall, I mean, what was it? 5 goals on 12 shots? Like, we were talking about the shots and I don't remember what the shots were after the second intermission, but the Jets had more shots. Like, I think they had something like 5 or 6 more shots, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
The point was, it was 5-1 Tampa Bay based on what, 17 or 18 shots that Tampa Bay had, like, or 20 shots, whatever it was.
Well, it was on 11.
Oh, so less than that, right?
Yeah, they had 5 goals on 11
Sorry,
shots.
Sorry, yeah, I just said that. It was even less than that. But the point is that it's not like Tampa Bay was dominating the Jets in every facet.
Right.
The Tampa Bay Lightning are a team that we know is a good team in transition, and they're not the type of team that you can afford to turn the puck over with, right?
Yeah, mistakes are deadly against this team.
Right.
And the one thing I would say is, if Jets fans are reflecting back on the game in Tampa where the Jets won, you know, this isn't that same Tampa Bay team. This is a Tampa Bay, and we talked to Brian Engblom at the time, former Jets broadcaster, now obviously broadcasting in Tampa, and he essentially said, like, this team is kind of still putting it all together.
Yep.
You know, they were over in Europe. They had played a lot less games. And it was funny because, like, people are like, oh, should you be worried about this? And I thought to myself, like, this is a Tampa team that's probably happy that nobody's talking about them, happy that they're kind of, you know, lost in the, because last year they were so far ahead of it that they were in cruise control up until the playoffs. And, you know, they, like, starting what? By, like, January, December. This year they're fighting, but, like, the truth is they're just riding. This is like a juggernaut, right? So you've got to Tampa. But having said that, they still, even in this last few games, hadn't been on the road trip, sorry, that they were on. You know, they hadn't had a ton of success. Obviously, like I said, losing to Minnesota the night before. And I think they had a shootout loss as well during this road trip. So you've got a Tampa team that's coming in. But again, it's like one of those things. Like, how do you not have your guys ready or that effort last night? Because, like, last night, you're right in the contest. And again, to your point, Ezzy, like, Kyle Connor puts it off the post. I mean, there's some close plays where it could have been a tighter game. But it's the small details that this Jets team just didn't execute last night that ended up blowing the game open. And you just see how you can't afford it. And I really think the key point is, offense is wonderful. And it's interesting because it's not that the Jets are, quote, cheating for offense. They may have been a little bit yesterday, but, like, it's more just a function of these guys talk about that, right? They talk, Blake Wheeler, oftentimes when he is asked about it, he says, you know, if we do the right things with the puck defensively, we'll get our opportunities offensively. And I just think like they weren't doing last night the right things, not just one guy. Like this was like a collective team, poor effort in terms of not execution, in a lack of execution, sorry. And I just, you just watch that game and you're thinking to yourself like, okay, it was 7-1.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. And Dave, I want to get back into the Jets' defensive miscues and, mm-hmm. and the way they played last night, the way they played on this three-game homestand. But, you know, just back to the Tampa Bay Lightning. I mean, we all know that the Lightning didn't start off how they wanted to. They were basically a 500 team after the first couple months. Since early December, we know they've been the best team in the entire league. And I agree with you. I think when the expectations are a little bit lower, as opposed to last year, mm-hmm. we know the 128-point season. And maybe that poor start is actually going to be a blessing in disguise. And, you know, now they've been able to come from behind. And obviously, the Boston Bruins have been leading that Atlantic division the whole year. So I agree with you. I don't think you want to play the Lightning. And the thing that stood out to me, even though I don't think Andrei Vasilevskiy was anywhere close to having to steal this game or, mm-hmm. or make some fantastic saves, Vasilevskiy looks like the Vasilevskiy of old, right? Like earlier in the season, Vasilevskiy was really struggling, right? You had a save percentage that was right around 900,
right.
And now it's closer to 920, right, where you expect it. But this is a guy that is a Vezina Trophy type of goalie, mm-hmm. right? So it was a good goaltending battle. I want to go back to the game against the Nashville Predators because we know that Hellebuck was really good in that game, yep. even though they lost the game, and then he gets the shutout on Tuesday. When you look at this homestand, Dave, because we know that coming up, the Jets have got three games in 4 days, and we're going to talk more about the Jets-Hawks game. We got Jimmy Greenfield of the Chicago Tribune, our really good friend. He's going to come up in about 45 minutes at 10 o'clock, so we're going to preview tomorrow night's game, mm-hmm. which is at 6 o'clock, a game, of course, you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. But when you're looking at this homestand, I mean, how concerned are you going forward? Because, you know, that first period against Nashville on Sunday, we know that was a bad first period. But they come back, they have a pretty good effort against the Vancouver Canucks. They start to look, they start to resemble like the Jets of November or, you know, that good Jets team that you're used to seeing. But when you take a big step back like this, I mean, how concerned are you? Because Chicago is only 4 points behind you, and you can say whatever you want about Chicago, but Carolina and Columbus, those are two teams right now that are both in a playoff spot.
No, look, as there's no question about it. These guys have not had home ice advantage. Like, it really doesn't feel like Bell MTS Place of old where teams were, quote, afraid to come in and play the Jets because the Jets were, had this, what appeared, at least was a perceived advantage at home. I mean, they're 11-11-2, so below 500 right now at home. You know, and like you just said, you got Chicago that's 4 points back. You got Nashville that's 5 points back, but they have two games in hand on you. And you have Minnesota who's 6 points back with one game in hand. Now, having said that, Dallas and Colorado are only 4 points up on you with having played one less game. So I talked about this yesterday because, like, I mean, again, the funniest part is you look at Chicago, it just goes to show you how weird the Central has been this year. Because remember, at one point we were talking, well, the Hawks are a non-factor. Minnesota's a surprising factor. The Hawks are a non-factor. Well, the Hawks, you know, are 7-3-0 in their last 10 and seem to be riding something right now. So, I mean, I think you have to be concerned. I think you have to be concerned with the fact that, look, that Nashville game was a tight game. That could have gone either way. I agree with you. I thought Hellebuck was good. I think that the Vancouver game, you're left thinking, is this the Jets team that you're used to seeing, in quotes, or is it more of an aberration, as our friend Scott Billick called it yesterday in his reflections from the Winnipeg Sun. So you're left thinking, okay, what is this team? And then you're thinking, well, what a great test. The Tampa Bay Lightning. Even though they've played the night before, the Tampa Bay Lightning, who are as hot as any team in the NHL.
The best record since December 10th.
Right.
Right.
So you're thinking to yourself, this is going to be a real test. Well, if that was the test, the grade is an F.
We're going to head to break now. When we come back, we're going to be joined by our good friend Murat Attes of the Athletic Winnipeg. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
We're back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Ezra Ginsberg and David Minuk. No Drew Mandel this week. He will be back next weekend. This segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, visit lindenmarketdental.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome our very good friend, Murat Attes of The Athletic Winnipeg. Murat, how's it going? Happy New Year. And let's get right into that game last night between the Jets and the Lightning. We played the clip of Paul Maurice during the first segment. You asked Paul Maurice about what you can extrapolate from last night's game. So what are you going to extrapolate from last night's game?
Well, just that whether it was a one-off, and I don't think we can look at it as a one-off given that the sort of listless effort against Nashville began the homestand. That nice game against Vancouver was its middle, and then it sort of went out just in terrible fashion against Tampa Bay last night. I think, it's sort of in grind mode from here throughout the rest of the season, and last night it was clear that there were two different tiers of team in the building, on the paper, on the ice, and in execution as well. So I think this is a significant gut check moment for the Winnipeg Jets this season. Paul Maurice talked about looking at certain one-on-one moments where they failed against Tampa Bay, and that'll be the focus of practice today. Well, they got some work to put in because that was their poorest effort in ages, to my mind.
You know, Murat, you wrote about the coaching carousel and how it's been spinning a lot this season, already 7 times. And then you wrote about what would it take for the Jets to move on from Paul Maurice. So, I mean, we're not going to use last night as the only example, but do you think that that's a possibility this season?
You know, I don't think that that's something that's going to happen this season. I don't think it's an absolute guarantee that he returns in the offseason either. There's been so much going on in extenuating circumstances this year that I think a certain amount of struggle is well within the realm of reasonable. I'm certain he has good relationships with all of the key people in the Winnipeg organization. I don't think that they're going to make any sort of gut moves on this. They're not going to look at a game like last night's and make a one-game decision or anything like that. At the same time, there is a lack of performance to a certain degree through the second half of last season, this season as well. I still think that we're within the realm of what the organization would view as reasonable. I keep saying satisfaction is expectations versus results. And so far this season, the idea that they'd be, in that mix for a playoff spot is, maybe goaltender driven, certainly, but in line probably with what the organization is looking at. So I think we would need a few weeks or a long stretch of games that look like last night's. And certainly then, it's a results driven business.
We're joined by Murat Attes of The Athletic Winnipeg on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. And, Murat, going back to what we were talking about, at the beginning of this interview, and, Paul Maurice talking about, the one-on-one battles and how the Jets have to be better defensively. I mean, we've got, 34 games left here in the regular season, and the Jets are battling with teams like Edmonton and Vancouver, Vegas, Colorado, Chicago. But when you look at the upcoming games and, you've got a couple of tough ones back to back, and the game against Chicago is never going to be easy. But, what concerns you the most and what gives you optimism that this Jets team is going to be able to stay in this fight? Because, we know that the Jets' top two scoring lines have been really good. Scheifele and Wheeler's lines have been really good. Connor Hellebuck has been one of the best goalies in the league. But maybe what's something that you're focusing on? We talked about the defensive game again, but specifically, who needs to be better? Where do the Jets need to be better? What areas do they need to be better in order for them to pick up some wins on the road and get this on the right track?
Right. So in terms of concerns, I think the clear one, yes, it's easy to keep harping on the defense, and certainly they entered the season, already one step behind without Byfuglien and then the string of injuries. Almost everybody on the Winnipeg Jets blue line is playing about a rung, maybe two rungs higher on the depth chart this season, and specifically last night, and with all of these injuries than maybe a year ago, right? You have Josh Morrissey was a top pairing defense last year. Neil Pionk was a top four defense last year. And just about everybody else was, either between the press box and the NHL or AHL, or in the AHL itself as well. So, I mean, they're leaning on some guys that are, maybe a little bit outmatched. So I don't know, in terms of concerns, that's something that's going to change anytime soon. There's no cavalry coming on that front. So where does the rest of the improvement come from? I thought last night, in particular, and that is a little bit emblematic of something we've seen this season. Mark Scheifele was beat in his defensive zone multiple times. Anthony Cirelli, in particular, had his way with Mark Scheifele last night. And Scheifele is an all-world offensive player. I easily have him inside my top 10, even this season in terms of offensive performances, not just in terms of point totals, but what he creates for other people. We've got a couple of pieces up at The Athletic in the last couple of weeks that sort of poke at the idea that he's an all-world center in his own defense, in his defensive zone as well. And then last night in particular, I would say, was a few examples of missed coverage from him. He sort of, you know, hits glide mode when Anthony Cirelli bursts in on the two-on-one for, I think it was his second goal of the night. And that wasn't the only case. So you have an all-world center with all kinds of ability and certainly one of the brightest brains in the game. So I think that what I would be looking for would be not only the top six sort of being effective in an offensive perspective, but in Winnipeg's own zone as well, because as we know, there's a lot of work to do there.
Well, Murat, it was fortuitous that you wrote on Monday, which is in advance of the game last night, that the bubble has burst in Winnipeg. And is it time for a shakeup? So answer that question for our listeners. Is it time for a shakeup here in Winnipeg?
Again, not quite, but we're certainly seeing symptoms that would point that way. For me, you need a little bit of a trend of the results looking like they did last night before it's shakeup time. The reason that I say that, and the reason I kind of harp on, you know, the underlying numbers are bad and the penalty kill is bad and all these sorts of things. And just a moment ago, I'm criticizing one of the best centers in the world's defense. And I think that cost them last night in addition to so many other things. I don't want to hang it on one person. And then to come out with the conclusion that it's not quite shakeup time, I think it's because my expectations are framed by the quality of the defense on paper, and I think that that's framed in part with the Buffalo situation. I don't think there's a cavalry coming in any way, shape, or form, roster move-wise, because I don't look at this team and see, like, okay, like in the last couple of years where there was some real argument for, you know, give up a first-round pick, get that big player, address the weakness. I don't think this team is a player away from, you know, cementing a playoff spot or becoming a contender or whatever the next step is for them. So in terms of a shakeup, assets-wise, I think it might be worth accepting a certain amount of retool season, except there's only a few points away. If there is an improvement to be made on the ice in their performance, playoffs are still completely within reach. But in terms of just making big investments and then shaking things up in that way, I don't necessarily see that coming around. And then when it comes to the coach, as we've been talking about as well, I don't know that the Berube effect is accessible in late January, in February, or what have you. I don't know that's necessarily the answer here either. But that would be worth a long look in the offseason as the team decides to or thinks about reclaiming its window.
We're joined by our good friend Murat Ates of The Athletic Winnipeg. And, you know, Murat, you mentioned, you know, the cavalry is not coming. You don't expect big moves. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. And when you look at, you know, the Jets forward lines, you know, and the bottom six, I mean, we've talked about this many times before this year. The Jets maybe aren't getting that production that they would like from the bottom six, even though Jack Roslovic has moved down to the third line and he's got goals in consecutive games. Gabriel Bork goes back into the lineup for Jansen Harkins. I mean, what are your thoughts on Harkins right now? He's played 9 games for the Jets, still looking for his first goal, but do you expect to see Harkins back in the lineup against Chicago? Should he be back in the lineup? And what do you make of, I guess, the way the third and fourth lines have looked? Because even though you're getting a little bit of offense, I think you'd agree you definitely want to be getting more offense from those bottom two lines.
Certainly. I think there's been, depending on which line we're talking about, a bit of an uptick in a couple of different areas. And certainly Roslovic's goal last night, I don't think that too many people are going to hang their hat on it just because of the circumstances of the game. But that pass that Adam Lowry fed him for the breakaway against Vancouver was a nice step and a nice look from that particular group. I found that the Kopp-Lowry Perreault group earlier in the season, before Perreault's concussion, was a driver of a lot of wins in terms of how they were able to saw off some of the top-end competition as we're used to seeing from that group. Now, certainly, stars win games in the offense from the top six, and your Scheifele's and your Wheelers and your Ehlers and your Lion-A's, et cetera, Kyle Connor as well. I think that they were full value, but that Kopp-Lowry group, when that group is together, if the defense is good enough, you don't necessarily need a ton of offense from them. I think in an ideal circumstance, Adam Lowry's offense has not necessarily been there, but there's so much heavy lifting to do with that group. That's not within my expectation. The the Nick Shore trio has been a huge step up from when it was left sort of the young guys and David Gustafson and Yona Luoto, Logan Shaw. They didn't get results, and they were also in their zone for long stretches. Paul Maurice has conceded that. The numbers show it. They were outshot. They used to get outshot by about a 3-to-1 margin. That's how often they were in their own zone. Nick Shore has been a boon there as well. So I think to a certain degree, the bleeding is stopping at that level. But to your original point again about Jansen Harkins as well, there is a player that I've been so impressed by since he came up. And often, you know, as you learn what a player's skating style is, and often, you know, you watch a lot of hockey guys, you can tell who is who, whether you've got their number or their name inside or not. Well, Jansen Harkins is a little bit new to me. And my question, I kept asking myself, who's that guy hustling his tail off? Who's that guy on the forecheck? And it was Harkins so often. And I've loved the energy that he's brought. In terms of him coming back into the lineup, Paul Maurice says that he'll rotate with Gabriel Bork even when they're both playing well. For me, that's a minor criticism because Jansen Harkins is under team control for a long time. He's a restricted free agent this summer. He's got pedigree and has excelled at the AHL, and he's a much younger man than Gabriel Bork is as well. So for me, there's a certain amount of thought that says, okay, if these guys are equal to the point of rotation, Jansen Harkins is the one to invest in because Bork is a pending unrestricted free agent.
All right, Murat, so I'm asking you to put on your prognostication hat, if you own one, and tell us, if you are the Jets and you're not going to break it up, if you're not going to blow this team up, if you're not going to make any major moves, are you somewhat counting on Dustin Byfuglien and Brian Little? I mean, these guys are two guys who could be somewhat of a difference maker on this team. So are you thinking, if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, are you thinking to yourself, and again, we don't know the status, we don't know when, we know Brian Little's obviously skating with the team in a more frequent basis, but do you think he's in the back of his mind thinking, well, I've got these two guys who, in theory, could be difference makers on this team a little bit?
You know, first off, it's a prognostication. Took. But also, oh man, the winter this week. Okay, to answer your question, I don't personally get the sense that Little is coming back soon. I think he's still got a lot to battle with. Even though we're seeing him more on the ice more and more, and then with Dustin Byfuglien as well. I mean, you know, as rehab continues, there seems to be some time between now and being able to, you know, step it up to practice and all those sorts of things. Even in a best case scenario where everybody's happy and Buffalo's back, I think that there's a long enough stretch of schedule between now and those types of return that whatever is going to be solved in terms of results and wins in Winnipeg is going to have to be done by the men that are in the room today and will be suiting up for practice. You'll look for another big resurgence from Connor Hellebuck and that continued staying in the fight mentality. I think, you know, for all of the harping I do on the negative things, the attitude within that group has been solid so far this season. Paul Maurice alludes to it often. And really, you know, they're fighting against the current, to be sure, but they're in it together, and they talk about being connected and all those sorts of things. I don't think it's a character flaw to be outmatched, and as a matter of fact, I think there's plenty of character there. So we'll see what the guys that are there can do.
Murat Ates is a writer with TheAthletic.com, along with Ken Weeb, very talented writer, very articulate guy. We always appreciate you joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we're going to do it again soon. Talk to you soon, Murat.
Talk to you soon. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care. We're going to head to break. When we come back, Dave, we're going to talk about Matty Perreault's comments from earlier this week. Obviously, the Jake Virtanen hit on Matty Perreault, it was a hit that Perreault thought should have been suspended. I think a lot of people thought should have been suspended. So we're going to talk about that hit specifically. We're going to talk about Perreault's concussion history, Perreault's play this year for the Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's a Saturday. I see Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, to be honest. Player safety my ass. Like, this is literally a elbow to the face to a guy that didn't have the puck. I see him coming, I brace for a hit. It was a late hit, I never had the puck, and he flicks his elbow to my face, and they're not going to do anything about it. So now I got to take matters in my own hand next time this happens, and I get to swing my stick across his forehead, and I shouldn't get suspended then.
That's number 85, Matthew Perreault, talking about the aftermath of the Jake Virtanen elbow to the head from Tuesday night's game between the Jets and the Canucks. Obviously, Perreault thought there should have been a suspension. I think there should have been a suspension. Many people thought there should have been suspension, but
Except for the people in the Department of Player Safety.
Exactly. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. Drew Mandel is away from the show this week. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all of your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. And obviously, Dave, you know, the hit, the Vertanen hit on Perreault, you know, it's 5 days ago now or 4 days ago, Tuesday night against the Canucks. And we were waiting, you know, Wednesday, Thursday to kind of get some feedback. And I think we were expecting it to maybe be a game, maybe be a couple of games. And, you know, when it comes to Matty Perreault, that vicious hit from Joel Farabee, what was that, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago when the Flyers were in town?
Right.
Farabee, I believe, got 3 games. It was either 2 games or 3 games for that hit. And that was much more egregious than the Vertanen hit. But, you know, watching that game Tuesday night, and I know you were there. I was at home watching the game on TV. But, you know, in between the commercial break and when they came back, they showed a little bit of Matty Perreault chirping the refs, chirping Vertanen. I mean, he was not happy. And when it came to light that there wasn't going to be a suspension for Jake Vertanen and the Assemble media, you know, Mike McIntyre, I think Teddy Wyman was in that scrum as well. I mean, it seemed like Perreault just needed to get that off of his chest.
Yeah, I mean, look, Matthew Perreault has a history, obviously, of, you know, he's got to be careful in terms of, you know, the head injury. I mean, any player does, obviously, but he's a smaller guy, and he's PO'd because he just saw a guy who essentially flicked his elbow at the last second to kind of give him the old, you know, little bit of a, well, how do you do? And I mean, how often do you see Matthew Perreault go off like that? Like go off talking to the refs like that and yelling at the bench. Like, and again, I don't know if they showed it like to the same degree, but like I'm sitting upstairs in the press box and I'm looking down at Perreault and, you know, there's obviously play is no longer going on and he's spending probably a good, you know, 30 seconds, which feels like a lifetime, chirping that Canucks bench. And like, it's interesting, right? Because that's not a guy who does that kind of stuff. He's a passionate player. We know that, but he's not a guy who's like the most vocal in terms of chirping, in terms of like going after guys, in terms of going after an entire bench. And you could just see like that sort of incident, the Farabee incident, it really makes you sensitive if you're Matthew Perreault to what can happen in a hockey game. And you know, you've already got a situation where it's cost you some games as a result of what happened. And then all of a sudden, you know, on a play where you don't have the puck, like again, you can't excuse a attempt to hit someone in the head, even if they have the puck, but it's even less excusable when the guy doesn't have the puck. So there's no play anymore at that point. So you're literally just trying to, you know, give him a little shot. And again, you can say, well, it's a size mismatch, whatever, but like, I don't know. I watched the replay enough and we know that this game happens at a fast pace, but I just didn't think to myself, I didn't think that it would merit anything. I didn't think that they coincidentally, as they just showed it on SportsCenter. So to me, it's one of those situations where if you would have told me today that the only person who got a talking to from the NHL as a result of that incident was Matthew Perreault, I mean, obviously it wasn't that incident that did, but like his comments after, I'd be shocked because
it's ridiculous. And how is that not called a penalty on the ice, right? Like I can understand, you know, hockey happens very fast. We talk about this. It seems like, you know, on a weekly or monthly basis, like it's easy for referees to miss that, right? Especially when you've got, you know, a sizable difference in height, right? Like what are we talking about? 4 or 5 inches, right?
Yeah.
At least 3 inches between Vertanen and Perreault, right? Perreault even talked about that, you know, later to the media. He talked about how he's usually one of the smaller players on the ice, right, Dave?
Yeah.
But when you're talking about that specific hit, okay, I get it. I'll give the referees a pass that they didn't call it a penalty on the ice, but the fact that the NHL Department of Player Safety viewed that hit multiple times, and we've viewed it multiple times, a lot of Jets fans have, because I think a lot of Jets fans are scratching their heads wondering why there wasn't a suspension on that play. And, you know, we're going to get into the Zach Cassian, Matthew Tkachuk feud a little bit later, and that's great, because not only do I think it's great to see that type of battle between those two those two players.
Right.
It's between the two teams, right? Like the Battle of Alberta is back, and Edmonton and Calgary are going to play at the end of this month in Calgary. And you can bet that, you know, Matthew Tkachuk and Zach Cassian are going to be looking for each other on the ice. But
I'm pretty sure that isn't that Cassian's first game back.
Yes, it is. So when you talk about, you know, Matty Perreault, going back to it, and, you know, we know that Matty Perreault has struggled a little bit. He picked up an assist yesterday on Jack Roslovic's goal, but I think he's got 1 point in his last 10 games or 1 point in his last 11 games. And I'm not knocking Perreault because, you know, Dave, I'm a big Matty Perreault fan, and I think, you know, a lot of people are, and I think he's a really good third line player for the Jets, a guy that can even move up to the second line. But let's be honest, Perreault has struggled offensively this year, and you can say, you know, he has been a bit of a streaky scorer over the course of his career. And I wonder if maybe that factors into it a little bit as well, right? Like, you know, he's not getting the points on the board. Maybe he doesn't feel like he's contributing offensively. And Perreault is a guy that has that defensive responsibility, the defensive acumen, but he's also a guy that has an offensive touch, and he wants to contribute. So that's just one other thing that I think, you know, needs to be mentioned, that I think that might factor into it as well. Even though the Jets won that game on Tuesday night against Vancouver, I think Perreault might be a little bit frustrated with his own game. But going back to the actual incident and the NHL Department of Player Safety, do they not have to look at Perreault's history with concussions and what happened to him with Joel Farabee? And also another stat that I found very interesting, Dave, is that I think Perreault has been directly responsible for 4 suspensions against players from incidents that have involved Matty Perreault. So he is a guy that plays on the edge. He's a clean player, but he's a guy that can agitate, you know, the opposing team's players. So doesn't the NHL Department of Player Safety just at the very least have to give Vertanen 1 game for that hit?
Well, I mean, I really have to thank TSN for this, because they're showing, they're little, as the segment is going on, they're showing it on the television. So it's refreshing everything in my mind.
I actually planned that.
Yeah, I really appreciate both you and from TSN's perspective. But like, you just see, like, look, the puck is like not even close to Perreault at this point. And you could say Vertanen's finishing his check, but like, he's not looking. He turns away. And yeah, I mean, like, it's an interesting play. And look, Perreault's an emotional guy, but I mean, I think that there's no question that they absolutely had to give it a look. And I think at minimum, simply because even if you don't think it's an egregious play, even if you think he didn't make the right type of contact to cause a suspension, which I could say, sure, you're entitled to that opinion. But even if you don't, because I'm watching it now, like he gets his elbow up, but he doesn't necessarily make contact with the head. But Perreault, I think, is hypersensitive. Well, actually, maybe he does a little bit. But
I think it's absolutely a hit to the head. That, to me, that is the issue here. It's that Vertanen is a much bigger player.
Yeah, it's a 3-inch disparity. It's 6'1" and 5'10".
It's an elbow to the head.
Yeah.
Like,
but all I was going to say is,
I think you could argue that hit should have been a 3-game suspension.
All I was going to say is, you know, just to finish off my thought, I simply think that it's minimum a suspension, because the whole point is, hockey players are notoriously cheap, and nobody wants to pay 5, 10, whatever the suspension is going to be, because at the end of the day, you know, you've got to send a message. You don't want this stuff in the game. I mean, if you don't want this stuff in the game, don't allow it to happen. Have a zero tolerance policy. And guess what happens? These guys stop doing stuff like this, and you don't lose guys to concussions, because we know not only are there short-term ramifications from concussions, there's long-term ones. So don't do it. And you know how you don't do it? By suspending or fining these guys.
Dave, let's play Perreault's comments from yesterday. He backtracks a little bit. Obviously, there was an uproar after he said he was going to, you know, slash a player who does that next time. He wasn't being literal, of course, but let's play Perreault's comments from yesterday.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'd like to say, you know, like, my emotion got a little high there. Like, I obviously wouldn't slash anybody in the face. That's just not who I am. I've never done anything like that in my career. So, yeah, that was probably a little too much for me to say. I've always played a hard game between the whistle, within the rules, and never done anything to anybody, really. So that's just not who I am. So I wouldn't do anything like that. I would like to take that back for sure. I still don't agree with the decision. You know, I feel like any kind of hit to the head should be out of this game.
You know what I like about Perreault's comments? Mm. First of all, I'm not surprised at all that he backtracked a little bit, right? Because, you know, Dave, if you went to TSN on Thursday, I mean, this was front page news, right? Like, Perreault's comments, and obviously, you know, in the media, you know, we like to kind of make a big deal about nothing, but we also love great sound clips like that, right? Like, we talked about Zach Cassian, Matthew Tkachuk. Like, that's why it's kind of like the theater off the ice, right? Like, that's what we kind of like. It gives us something to talk about, right? Mm. But at the end of the day, we just talked about it. should have been a suspension. But what I like about Matty Perreault is even after he apologizes for what he said on Thursday, he says, yeah, but it was still a hit to the head. And that's the type of thing that we need to get out of the game.
Yeah, and that was my whole point. And that's why I think even if you don't think it's suspendable, you fine the guy.
Yep.
Because if you look at that and you could say, hey, there's no intent to injure. I mean, I don't know how you'd say that, but let's say you go on that premise that there's no intent to injure. It's marginal at best. It's still enough that it merited a suspension because that way Virtanen is not thinking to himself, hey, I can do something along that. I can keep that borderline. There shouldn't be a borderline. Again, don't target the head. We've talked about, I mean, the craziest part is, and you know, I actually thought Mike McIntyre, the Winnipeg Free Press, asked the best question. He said, why is the NHLPA, who is supposed to be your advocate, Matthew Perreault, not advocating on your behalf? Because that's, again, it's not just about Matthew Perreault in this one instance. Matthew Perreault could literally be the offender and do this to somebody else. Although, as he says, he's the smallest guy on the ice. It's a little bit difficult. But the point is that this is about all player safety. And it's idiotic to, with everything we know about concussions, to allow anything where it comes. And again, like, I don't mind hitting. I have no problems with hitting. I love hitting. I think hitting's part of the game. But I'm talking about like stupid hitting where it's like literally targeting a guy in the head.
It's a cheap shot.
It's got to go.
Perreault doesn't have the puck.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's a hit to the head all day long.
Yeah. So fine him.
So it really is baffling, Dave. I agree with you. And, you know, we mentioned it should have been a minimum game. And then as we've talked about it, I think it should have been a minimum two, maybe even three games. And you hit a really good point there. It's the consistency that you want to have from the NHL Department of Player Safety. And you want to know that they're not trying to be too lenient on players. And I think that's what might have happened here. And they might have looked at it and said, oh, that wasn't that bad. But I think when you factor in Matty Perreault's concussion history, it just happened about a month ago. You know, with Joel Farabee, and that was a really dirty hit that you could have argued should have maybe even been a 5-game suspension or a 10-game suspension. I think Matty Perreault is completely justified in being angry about that on the ice and on Thursday with the media. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Jack Roslovic. We're going to talk about Andrew Kopp. We're going to talk about the second and third lines, whether or not we think Jansen Harkins is going to be back in the lineup. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Now for Dahlstrom. Lead pass to center ice now. It's a breakaway here for Roslovic. Moving in, shoots and scores! Jack Roslovic, with dashing speed, took a three-way passing play from the Jets outside their own zone. It was a touch by Lowry in between. A breakaway goal for Roslovic, and it's 2-1 Winnipeg.
Jumping Jack Roslovic with the Jets' only goal last night in a 7-1 loss to the Tampa Bay Lightning. Roslovic's got goals in back-to-back games. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. I'm Ezra Ginsberg alongside Dave Minuk and Sean Assor. Drew Mandel is away from the program this week. Hopefully he's listening. A shout-out to my dad. He's in San Jose del Cabo listening to the show in Mexico, Dave. It's obviously much nicer than it is here in Winnipeg. I mean, it's ugly out there. Not that cold. Like, it's not as cold as it was earlier this week, like when it was minus 40 with the wind chill, but with the snow blowing and the roads are just horrible. Yeah, much nicer down there in Mexico, that's for sure.
But, you know, for all the Winnipeggers complaining about what we're calling a snowpocalypse here, not really, but like what we're complaining about here. Look at the East Coast. If you want to complain, that's some snow. Those pictures of people with, they open their doors and it is right to the top with snow, are absolutely insane.
I don't know if you were listening to the afternoon ride before yesterday's game, but Rick Ralph actually mentioned on the afternoon ride that there was a woman, I don't know if it was in St. John's or somewhere else in Newfoundland, because of how much snow there is, you know, 100 centimeters and all that. I think what Rick said is that she actually drove herself. She's pregnant, I should mention. Mm-hmm. And she drove herself on a snowmobile to the hospital because they couldn't take their car.
Right.
Because the car was covered in snow.
Yeah.
So she actually drove herself on a snowmobile. Like, that's how crazy it is. So even though we're getting, you know, 15 centimeters of snow here in Winnipeg, you know, it's much, much worse out there in the Maritimes. And by the way, we're used to this. 20 centimeters, 30 centimeters.
I mean, I don't want it because
Winnipeg, guys.
I don't care about snow. I just care about these terrible drivers in Winnipeg. And I was ready to rant yesterday because holy moly, was it terrible. I mean, you already have bad drivers. Sorry, I'm going to go on a little tangent. You've already got bad drivers in Winnipeg, and the snow just makes it so much worse.
You just have to be smart, right? Like, you just have to slow down a little bit and realize that the driving conditions are not ideal. So just that's it. That's all you have to do. Just be smart.
Yeah.
If you have to get somewhere, just realize that, you know, you might be a little bit late. Like, I work downtown, and it took me an hour and 10 minutes to get home.
Mm-hmm.
And I live in River Heights, so I'm not that far from downtown, right? Like, so, you know, does that suck? Yeah, it sucks. I want to get home. I want to be with my kids. But, you know, you have to realize, you know, you have to sacrifice a little bit when the roads are that bad. So just be smart out there, guys, wherever you're driving, whether it's in Winnipeg or outside of Winnipeg. Yeah, and just put a legal curve on.
Relax.
Hopefully it's on already, but, you know, just keep it on a legal curve if you're listening. Also, shout out to your parents who are down in Del Boca Vista, Florida.
That's right.
I'm not sure if they're listening as well like my dad, but, you know, they're somewhere much warmer. So shout out to Gary and Cheryl Manuk. Obviously, I have had the privilege of staying at your abode down there in Florida for the 2015 draft when it was in Sunrise, Dave. So shout out to your parents. We want to mention the IC question of the day. We mentioned it earlier. We want to get your feedback on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Text us 129090. We're going to read some of the tweets and texts later, but we want to know, do you believe your Winnipeg Jets should be in the market for a top four defenseman? We're 5 weeks away from the NHL trade deadline. And a little bit later on the show, we're going to have some fun and we're going to play the NHL trade deadline match game where we're going to go through some of the players that are currently on the TSN trade bait board. And we're going to discuss whether or not we believe that they could be a match for the Winnipeg Jets. And obviously most of them are not going to be. I don't think anybody is expecting the Jets to be as active as they were last year, this year. But again, tweet us at Illegal Curve and let us know, should the Jets be in the market for a top four defenseman? And obviously, Dave, that's not something that's going to be easy to acquire because there are a lot of teams that would love to have another top four defenseman. And when you look at some of the players that are on the trade bait board, you know, whether it's a guy like a Chris Kreider or a Tyler Toffoli or a J.G. Pageau, I mean, there aren't that many top four defensemen. I mean, you've got guys like, you know, Brendan Dillon and, you know, Alec Martinez. There aren't a lot of guys that are out there. So it's going to be tough, but, you know, the Jets do have some really good young forwards and, you know, maybe you do consider moving a draft pick, even if it is a first round draft pick. But that's our IC question of the day. So hit us up on Twitter at Illegal Curve. We're going to go to break now. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Jimmy Greenfield of the Chicago Tribune. The Jets and the Hawks meet tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. So Jimmy's going to join us next from Toronto. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour one down. It's the second hour of today's Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. The Winnipeg Jets dropped that game last night to the Tampa Bay Lightning 7-1 and finished the homestand with a record of 1-2. I'm Ezra Ginsberg alongside Dave Manuk. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We head to Toronto now. We're joined by Jimmy Greenfield of the Chicago Tribune. Good morning, Jimmy. Happy New Year. And what's the weather like in Toronto? Because we got a blizzard outside here in Winnipeg.
Good morning. Happy New Year. It's a blizzard here. And
nice.
We've got a blizzard in Chicago, so there's no escape.
I don't know if you've been following what's been happening in the Maritimes, but they're getting upwards of 100 centimeters in Newfoundland. So even though it's pretty snowy here in Winnipeg and to the east of us in Toronto, the Maritimes, I think, is getting it the worst. And I'm sure there's some places in the U.S. that are getting some of that cold stuff as well. Jimmy, yeah, we got to talk about the Blackhawks' recent string of games. They've put together three straight victories. Wednesday night, they defeat the Montreal Canadiens 4-1. Before that, they defeated the Ottawa Senators in overtime 3-2. The Chicago Blackhawks only 4 points behind the Winnipeg Jets right now. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games. I mean, is this Chicago team for real? Are they going to stick around in this playoff race?
Well, we're going to find out pretty soon because the next 17 games, I think, are against teams with a very similar or much better record than they are, than they have, you know, starting with, you know, tonight against the Maple Leafs. You know, the teams you mentioned there, the Senators, the Canadians, the Ducks are the other part of that three-game winning streak they're on. They're not good teams. They did not play poorly by any means. They did not play incredibly. They did what they're supposed to do against bad teams. They won, and that's been needed to do. You know, they're 9-4 in the last 13. They're putting themselves in a position to do better, but you know, it's important to be realistic about it. They're still without a lot of players. You know, they're down Calvin DeHaan and Brent Seabrook for the season. They're getting Brandon Saad back probably tonight. They should get Dylan Strome back after the All-Star break, and they should be healthier. But, you know, even with those guys, they weren't so hot to start the season. So everyone here insists they're better than their record, and they'll get a chance to prove it pretty soon.
You know, Jimmy, you wrote about Brandon Saad in the Chicago Tribune, and you talked about how the team has gone 9-4 without him. We know what a big piece he can be for this team, but how were they able to accomplish it without such a key piece in the lineup?
You know, Jonathan Toews has been phenomenal lately. You know, he got off to a slow start, but he's been, you know, you can even argue he's been as good as Kane in the last 3-4 weeks. He's scoring a ton. He's as much energy as he's had all season. Kane has been tremendous. Robin Leonard has been continued to be great. And that was a big part of this, too, is Jeremy Colleton went from alternating starts between Corey Crawford and Robin Leonard to using Leonard pretty much all the time. Leonard did get hurt for a little bit and missed three games, but he's back now and he's started winning again. And you know he's probably going to get the net every game except for when they were back to backs. So that's been a big key as well. Plus they've also had really good production and good play from a bunch of forwards who have come up from Rockford, Matthew Highmore. Dylan Sakura has been pretty good. John Quenville was here for a little bit. He had to go back for waiver reasons, but he was good when he was here. So they had guys who were adequately, better than adequate, but they were doing their job. And the defense has just been a little bit better. So they have played better for a nice period, but you know they got beat badly by the Devils, just before Christmas. So there have been some clunkers in there as well.
We're joined by Jimmy Greenfield of the Chicago Tribune live from Toronto on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. And, you know, Jimmy, you talked about the goaltending. Corey Crawford was in net for that last win. And, you know, Robin Leonard started the majority of the games, both pending unrestricted free agents, I should say. And, you know, a lot of talk lately about what Stan Bowman might do with his goaltenders. So, What do you see happening? Has this latest little winning streak changed anything, or is there a chance that the Hawks could move one of those goaltenders? And obviously, you know, the more likely one would probably be Corey Crawford, but do you expect a long-term contract coming potentially for Robin Leonard?
I certainly expect it more for Leonard than I would for Crawford. I wouldn't expect a long-term for Crawford, you know, I mean, for perhaps a one-year, depending how low he's willing to go. But he did, you know, talking to him earlier this week, he said he's not really ready to commit to being a backup for anyone, let alone the Hawks for next season. So he wants to play. He wants to be a starter. He's you know, he thinks he can be a starter for somebody. But the Hawks, you know, I think they've got Robin Leonard in the picture, and he's clearly been a better option for them all season. Being younger, being I think he just turned 29, or he's going to be 29. He's their future, and the problem there is he is an unrestricted free agent starting next, you know, in the summer. And he said, "I'm not giving a discount. I don't need to. I have no reason to. I'm an excellent goaltender, and I didn't do the Hawks any favors. They didn't do me any favors. I did them a favor by coming here." And that's the case. They got him on a really, really team-friendly deal, and he's the reason why they're even in the hunt at all. If it weren't for him, you know, they'd be languishing, you know, 5-10 points further back. So it's going to cost them, and they do have cap issues. They got some, you know, they've got $11 million tied up in goalies this season, and they just can't do that again going forward. So we'll have to make decisions. It'll kind of play itself out by maybe what Crawford decides to do, but certainly, you know, I think Leonard will be their priority. And he's not opposed to signing during the season, although I think doing that and kind of then making Crawford a true lame duck is probably unlikely. So I would imagine they wait until after the season's over to do anything with either one of them.
You know, Jimmy, Patrick Kane has 60 points right now. He's got 21 more points than the nearest guy, which is Jonathan Toews. He's on pace, obviously, for another second consecutive 100-plus point season. He's ninth overall in the NHL in scoring. What has been going so well for Patrick Kane this season?
You know, he just doesn't take any games off. Every game, he's excellent. You know, I was trying to figure out, you know, with his 1,000th point, you know, on the horizon, I was trying to figure out just how the Hawks do when he doesn't score. And over the last two seasons, you know, last year plus the first 48 games this year, they've won a total of three games when Patrick Kane has not scored. So when he doesn't score, they don't win ever. So they need him to produce the way he is. And he always has great games. It doesn't matter who he's playing with. He's had a lot of line mates. He's playing a lot of minutes. You know, obviously power play, even he's playing everywhere. He's been exceptional. Got a lot of energy. You can even, you know, tell he's playing a little more defensively. Some of the games against his weaker teams, I think he was maybe cherry picking a little bit more. But he seems to get better. You know, every season he seems to be getting better.
Jimmy Greenfield of the Chicago Tribune joins us live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. And, you know, Jimmy, we talked about the defense a little bit earlier. You know, you mentioned the Hawks are missing a couple of key defensemen in Calvin DeHaan and Brent Seabrook. Another player's name who has been kind of bandied about there in trade rumors is Erik Gustafsson. Had the big year last year. I believe he had 60 points last year on the back end for the Hawks. The numbers aren't quite there. Not saying that he's having a bad year, but he's another one of those players last year of his contract. Has his recent play changed anything? The Hawks' recent play, you know, the injuries to DeHaan and Seabrook, do you see him as potentially a guy that might be moved? And overall, you know, we talked about it earlier, but has Stan Bowman's strategy changed at all now that he's seen that this Hawks team is playing a little bit better and might even sneak into a playoff spot?
Well, I don't think it would be unfair to say he's had a bad year. Certainly, it's disappointing. You know, his season is not in line at all with last year. He's not on the top power play unit anymore. When he was on it, he wasn't scoring that much. I think he has 5 goals this season, 18 points or so compared to 60. Whether or not they're willing to deal him, if they're in contention, I would say they won't. You know, because they're down defensemen and they're having they have a need for him. Whether or not he's been struggling, he's still someone they need in there. And Boakvist coming up has you know, helped. He was at Rockford until early December. He had a little stint in November, but he came up for good about a month and a half ago. And the thing about Gustafsson is, and I imagine this is probably why they didn't trade him in the summer, is they probably weren't getting offers for him. I think they looked at his past. They realized that last year was probably a bit of a, maybe fluke is the wrong word, but certainly a correction was possible, and it looks like it's happened. So I would guess they probably wouldn't get much for him, or at least maybe a conditional pick if they were to trade him. I just don't know who they'd put in there in this place. They need him, and they still think they can make the playoffs. Even though they're 4 points back, they are behind a few teams, but 4 points is not all that much.
You know, Jimmy, last week on the show, we had Saskatoon Blades coach Mitch Love on, and I'm sure he'd love to have Kirby Dach still on his team. Of course, he's up with the big club in Chicago, and 42 games, 6 goals, 5 assists. What would you say the year has been like for the third overall pick in 2019?
It's been a learning experience for him. I think it's just kind of what they expected it would be. He certainly has struggled. He had a really nice stretch in mid-November where he started to put up some points. And even when he's not scoring, and you know, he's had a sort of remarkable last 2 months where he has, in the last 27 games or last month, he's got 1 goal and no assists in his last 27 games, which is almost impossible to do in this league. But he's going out there, he's playing his 15 minutes a game, he's getting the same ice time, he's playing on the top power play unit now, and he's getting the experience that they want him to have to be, you know, to the next year when he comes back, and he'll be presumably stronger and better. He can contribute more. He's just not adding to the production right now. He's kind of easily taken off the puck. Doesn't have any fear about going to corners, facing up to the stronger players around the league. He turns 19 in a few days. So it's important to remember he's still young. He's got a lot of muscle to put on. It's just, it's what would you expect from an 18-year-old who you know, hadn't played higher than the Western Hockey League until just a few months ago. And don't forget, he did have a slow start. He had a concussion to start the season and didn't start the season with the Hawks until late October. So it was been kind of an uneven rookie season for him.
We're joined by Jimmy Greenfield of the Chicago Tribune live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The Jets and Blackhawks meet tomorrow in the Windy City. Puck drops 6 p.m. Central. You can, of course, hear that game here live on TSN Radio 1290. Jimmy, wanted to ask you about Dominik Kubalik. Quietly, he's at 18 goals on this season. He was acquired from the LA Kings. He was a late draft pick. I mean, just how nice of a surprise has he been? Because it's not like the Hawks gave up a lot to acquire him.
No, it was a fifth-round pick that they had picked up from the Coyotes previously, so they pretty much gave up nothing for him. And, you know, the Hawks have had some really nice pickups with the European scouting. Gustafsson for one, Dominik Kuhn last year, and Kubalik this year. And he's just been terrific. He's a big guy. He's 24. He came into the league pretty confident. He's mild-mannered, but he's a confident player. He's got a phenomenal shot. He skates well. He's just been somebody who they were quickly able to count on. It took him a little bit to get into a scoring groove, but he just had that 5-game streak, a couple games where he scored two goals in a row, and he's just been very good. And again, he's another guy, he doesn't matter who they play him with. You know, it hasn't been just a matter of putting him on a line with Kane and Taves and letting him, benefit from their production. He goes to the net. He, goes into the corners. He's got a great step to the net too. So, they couldn't be happier. The only problem with him is he's a restricted free agent next year. And again, with the cap issues, now they got to figure out how to fit in a guy who might be scoring 30 goals this season.
No, Jimmy, 3 Stanley Cups in 6 seasons tends to breed expectation. The last 2 years, the Hawks have not made the playoffs. What's it like right now in Chicago amongst the fan base? Are they clamoring for change? Are they looking for, have the expectations kind of, are they meeting expectations, or are fans, pushing for something at this point?
Yeah, fans are pushing for something. I don't think there's a lot of love for Stan Bowman right now. I mean, there's an expectation that if they don't make the playoffs, that a move's got to be made, at least among the fans. I don't know what the organization is planning to do. They don't love change, and I think that Stan Bowman is still highly regarded by the John McDonough and his bosses. So it's an interesting time because all the hubbub over franchise of the decade and Patrick Kane leading the decade in scoring and just talking about the Cups again, it just makes you then turn and look at the standings and see what's happened the last 2 years and this year. And there's a lot of frustration. I think the fan base is pretty upset. At least the ones I hear, in emails and on Twitter. But I will tell you this, the Hawks still keep on selling out. They've got a 500 plus game sellout streak. Doesn't show any signs of abating, and as long as that's going, they're probably, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of anger. Although Jeremy Colliton is kind of getting booed more in pregame introductions, and then on Tuesday, Joel Quenneville comes to town, and that'll be interesting.
Jimmy, we mentioned the Blackhawks and the Toronto Maple Leafs do battle tonight in Toronto. About 3 hours ago, you tweeted a picture of your niece who looked like, was that a practice at the old Maple Leaf Gardens or a game? I'm not sure if it was a practice or a game, but how special was that for you to, come up to Toronto, working for the Chicago Tribune and then able to see your niece play at the old Maple Leaf Gardens?
Well, it was fantastic. It was very special. My niece is just taking up hockey. She loves it. And, even though she's got to be out there pretty early to go into the Maple Leaf Garden, and my brother who lives in Toronto and I went to the final game at Maple Leaf Garden in 1999 when the Leafs played the Hawks. And then to go in there and watch her skate and see all these girls out there early and just enjoying the sport was really special. It was a fun thing for me.
Well, we saw the tweet and a really cute picture. We'll retweet it from the Illegal Curve account. Jimmy, we really appreciate you coming on today with us. The Jets and Blackhawks do battle tomorrow at 6 p.m. Central in Chicago. But before that, the Hawks have a tough test against the Toronto Maple Leafs. So happy New Year. Take care, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
All right, we're going to head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about that Jets-Blackhawks game coming up tomorrow night in Chicago. It's going to kick off a tough three-game road trip. The Jets are going to have three games in 4 days, including the back-to-back games against the Carolina Hurricanes and the Columbus Blue Jackets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Back underway, onto the near side, no goal. Sammy Niku, far side, shot, they score! That's a goal! Kyle Connor, get up, get down with the quickness! And Winnipeg leads it 1-0 right off the faceoff.
Like Paulie said, get up, get down. That's what we do on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, I think.
I was going to try and literally get up, and then I realized I was tired.
Do we get up or down? I feel like
we're pretty
level.
Even keel.
Yeah, we're even keeled.
That's right.
Yeah. Welcome back, as I said, to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. That voice you heard was Dave Minuk. It's Ezra Ginsberg. Shawnee Assor is here as well, producing the show. Drew Mandel away from the program this week. What's the deal with Mandel? Like, this is his second holiday in the span of 4 weeks. Like, how many holidays does the guy need?
I don't know. You're talking to a guy who never takes any holidays, so I'm probably the wrong person to ask, but...
Yeah, well, we're worker bees.
We're
not a queen bee like Mandel.
No, you and I are the worker bees. We do the hard lifting, the heavy lifting. While Mindy is off gallivanting around the world. So there's no days off for Ezzy and Dave, and that's fine with us.
Dave, we want to mention the IC question of the day. We've thrown it out there on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Follow us at Illegal Curve. Tweet at us or send us a text on the TSN 1290 text line 129090. The IC question of the day is, should the Jets be in the market for a top four defenseman or... really a defenseman, but most likely it's going to be a top four defenseman. So let us know on Twitter, and we're going to read some of the responses. We're actually getting a lot of good feedback here. You know, some Jets fans don't think that we should acquire a defenseman. The Jets should acquire a defenseman, not we, but time to tank and get in good on a deep draft. This team is brutal and can't keep up. Can turn it around in two seasons as long as they don't give up picks. Nobody on Moose is an NHLer. Need to be strategic now. That's Bobby Winnipeg, ex-Jerry Hensel. They should be in the market for at least two top four defensemen. If Buff does happen to return, he alone will not turn this team around. More than one top four D-men are needed. Who else do we have here? We've got Scott T saying, yes, Buff needs to quit and make a decision. I mean, we're getting a lot of folks tweeting at us that say that if Buff comes back, then the Jets don't need to acquire a top four defenseman. But we're also getting a lot of feedback about the Jets, regardless of Buff's situation, saying that the Jets don't need to acquire a defenseman. So at Twitter, at Illegal Curves, pardon me, IC question of the day. Tell us if you think the Jets should acquire a top four defenseman. We'll try to read as many as we can. We've gotten a lot, so we're not going to be able to read everybody's tweets, but let us know on Twitter or text us at 129090 on the TSN 1290 text line whether or not you believe the Jets should acquire a top four defenseman. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see not only what happens with the Jets, Dave, heading into the trade deadline, and we're going to get more into the Jets Blackhawks. Puck drop tomorrow at 6 o'clock, Kaspersky, Winnipeg Jets Hockey on TSN Radio 1290. You can hear the broadcast live here on TSN 1290. The pregame show starts at 5.
Three-headed monster.
Yep, with Kevin Owen and friends. And then the afternoon ride, of course, starts at 3 o'clock with Huss and Rick. When you talk about the trade deadline, and we mentioned it a little bit earlier in the show, Dave, but you know, this year you don't have a Mark Stone, right? Like, you don't have as many big-name players. Taylor Hall is obviously off the board. He's been traded by the Devils to the Arizona Coyotes. And I think it is going to be very interesting, because when you talk about players like Chris Kreider and J.G. Pageot, Tyler Toffoli, players like that, I mean, you're talking about more like second and third line guys. All due respect, Chris Kreider maybe can play on your team's top line, but like J.G. Pageot on a good team is a third line guy.
You know, I think the key though is that's probably not such a bad thing, because I think the importance is, and we've seen it, right? There was an article recently, I referenced it last week, about that idea that teams that are needing to take major swings at the trade deadline aren't likely to have the success, because you're messing with the chemistry. You're not just augmenting a team that's already kind of cruising along. Like if Tampa Bay, you're not expecting them to make a major move. You know, may they add a piece that will just give them some further depth? Sure. But the point is, I think it's been borne out that making major swings, making major trades, while splashy, doesn't necessarily have the impact you want. Now, the Paul Stastny one, we obviously know, was probably, as you called it, as one of the best deadline acquisitions you're going to see out there because of just how well he fit here in Winnipeg. But overall, the idea that needing to make a major shift, especially to like your top line, right, or your top pairing, I mean, at that point, if you have to add a piece to one of those spots, are you really a contender at that point? So to me, the idea of just augmenting your team, adding a nice little depth piece, I think that goes a long way. But the idea of having to add something big is probably a mistake.
Dave, just getting back to a few more responses from sure. IC question of the day, because we're getting some good responses, and continue to tweet us at Illegal Curve. This is from Brian Harder. I don't think this Jets roster is one piece away. I would rather have the Jets develop their younger players like Harkins, Nyku, Appleton. In the offseason, they can obtain that third or fourth defenseman and start next season with a full roster, i.e. no buff situation. Corey K says that the Jets should have been in the market for a top four D-man since the draft, since last summer. Mm. At this point, it needs to be a hockey trade. Move an offensive forward, keep picks. Team needs balance. So, you know, there's a lot of different types of answers. And again, you know, let us know on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, if you think the Jets should acquire a top four defenseman. I think it's going to be really curious to see what the Jets do. Even if the Jets do go out there and acquire a defenseman, I agree with you, Dave. I don't think this is a situation like 2 years ago when you bring in Paul Stastny. That trade really works. Jets go all the way to the West Final, almost go to the Stanley Cup Final. Mm-hmm. Like, and also, I think the Jets, to a certain degree, are hamstrung with the Buff situation because of the cap space and all that. Is Buff coming back? And then how much cap space do you have? What assets are you prepared to give up? Like, I don't think Chevy wants to give up another first-round pick. I would be very surprised if the Jets trade their first-round pick for a third year in a row.
Especially with this draft.
Right.
And I think from a cap perspective, the Jets have banked quite a bit because of the Brian Little injury. So I think that their cap space right now is around $12 million. So they've got cap space, you know, not to add a huge piece, but they do have some cap space. So it's still going to be a factor.
But a lot of that cap space depends on Buff staying on long term.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, look, there's still some unanswered questions.
Staying off the books, right?
Yeah, of course. But again, it's not as tight as people are alluding to. But I mean, there's a little bit of room because of what happened with Brian Little and that sort of thing. But again, and also the Jets, look, they're smart, right? They don't bring Cam Schilling up on purpose, right? Like, you do try to bank as much as you can, you know, throughout the year to get to the point where you're it's not as big a concern. I just look at this Jets team and I think to yourself, you've got to be careful also in terms of term, because look, we talked about next year on last, where I did last week on the show, and we talked about who you're going to have defensively, right? You've got Pullman, you've got Morrissey, you've got Pionk, you've got Nyku, you've got potentially Samberg, you've got potentially Heinola.
Yep.
You know, you've got Dahlstrom technically because he's on another year for...
The Jets defense is going to look a lot different next year.
It's going to be that resurgence that we saw with the forward group. When you got the Kyle Connors, you got the Jack Roslovics, you got the Mason Appletons, that 2015 draft class that kind of, you know, came up through the ranks and into the Jets roster.
You make a good point, Dave, when you talk about, you know, you don't want to necessarily acquire a defenseman, or I think you're suggesting that the Jets probably won't acquire a defenseman that has even 1 or 2 years left on their contract after this year, because you know that you probably want to have a spot for Ville Heinola. Like, I don't think it's ridiculous to say that Ville Heinola is a top four defenseman for you next year, or at the very least is a top six defenseman, because how many defensemen have we seen come in as an 18-year-old and look that good for the Jets? Like, I don't think we've ever seen that, actually, even with, you know, Jacob Trouba and Josh Morrissey. Like, Jacob Trouba played a year for Michigan.
Right.
Josh Morrissey spent a couple of years with the Manitoba Moose. So Ville Heinola is a guy that absolutely I think you want to have a spot for in your top six next year. And then Dylan Samberg is another question mark. Like, is he a guy that plays a little bit with the Moose, or maybe is he a third pairing guy for you next year? So I think you make a really good point, but it's definitely something to talk about based on the way the Jets have struggled and with the injuries they have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with, you know, Tucker Pullman is injured right now, but he could be back tomorrow. He's definitely going to be back soon. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you've got Carl Dahlstrom out of the lineup, Nathan Beaulieu out of the lineup. So maybe we're talking about, you know, the Jets just acquiring a depth defenseman right now and not a top four guy. But it's going to be really interesting to see with 5 weeks to go before the trade deadline.
Well, and I think the key piece also, to your point, is that idea of depth on defense. Because we're looking at it right now. You've got Cam Schilling up with the Jets right now. Who are you calling next? I mean, really, it would be Nelson Noje, but his play with the Moose hasn't merited a recall. But that's really almost your only option at this point. So the idea that you need to have depth in your organization, you know, two, three, four, like, it's not just who's that guy in the press box. It's also who are the 2, 3, 4 guys that are going to be getting called if they need to from the Moose.
Dave, we're up against the break. We're going to go to break now. We didn't talk a lot about the Jets and Blackhawks. We're going to talk about that next hour a little bit. And we got Jets practice coming up at noon. So obviously we're not going to be able to share anything while we're on the air about Jets practice, but we are going to go back to the Jets Blackhawks game, preview that game tomorrow night. Next segment, we've got a fun little segment coming up. It's going to be the NHL trade deadline match game. As we mentioned, 5 weeks to go before the NHL trade deadline on February 24th. We're going to go over some names that are on the TSN trade bait board. I'm going to ask Dave Minuk, and then I'm going to give my opinion on whether we think that that could be a match for the Jets. Obviously, this is just fun. Almost all of these guys, if not all of them, are going to be on other teams. Maybe they won't even be traded, but it's just a fun exercise with 5 weeks to go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll be back. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.